The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the Weekend Podcast. I'm joined by Peter. Paddy's not here. He's in Valencia. Since you guys, what's going on here? It's like you were in Portugal last week.
I was last week.
Steve, this week, we said he can't do it, so I thought he misspelt on our WhatsApp group. He said, sorry, I'm going to Glastonbury. And I thought, I thought he's misspelled, because Steve's spelling is not that good, is it? Let's be honest. He often misspells.
Yeah. And he's also a month late for Glastonbury.
And that's typical of Steve. He's already gone there at the wrong time. He's misspelt it. And I realised, no, it's Barry, of course, the island of Barry. I don't know if it's an island, actually. Is it officially an island? I don't know, in South Wales. But they're good at marketing themselves, Barry, aren't they? From Gavin to Stacey, and they've really jumped on that marketing bangor. Now he's got Glastonbury. Hopefully they have good weather. Steve's working down there, doing the sound and stuff. So we did send a couple of pictures on his Instagram, and it's looking good there. I don't know who the gigs are, who the lineup is. Do you know what
It's quite a big festival, yeah. I think it's become quite a thing. I don't know how many. It's a good few thousand people go, yeah.
Well, is that irony of being Barry, exotic place? Yes. Good for a laugh, you know, Barry, good for a laugh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. I just realised, you know, over the last few months and stuff, we have just talked about stuff, a lot of stuff. We start the podcast and it's gone on, and I've not talked about stocks and shares. And largely, I thought subconsciously I've done that, I suppose, because the market's been bloody awful. Awful.
Yes.
And I just want to avoid talking about them. There's nothing to talk about. You know, even if you've got good investment ideas, no one's interested in the market. So I want to get straight into it. And in this podcast, Pete, right, within half an hour, I'm going to give you one bit of advice that will transform your investment returns. Absolutely transform them. Honestly, okay. No, you'll thank me for it. And it's quite obvious, really. It's quite obvious. Yeah. But you'll
thank me. Don't do it.
Avoid bear markets. That's it. It'll transform. And if you put it into practice, it will transform your returns. Absolutely.
Okay.
First of all, I'm never going to give tips again to anyone who doesn't do investing, who doesn't research a bit, who's not into it full time. And I advise anyone listening to this, never give tips to people down the pub who are not generally into investing. It'll always go wrong because, you know, you can't predict the markets. And the best thing you can ever say to someone in the pub, if they say, oh, you're in a stock share, isn't it? Because what you get is like, you won't get people asking for tips when the market's on its arse, on its backside, you know? They only ever ask at the top of the market, pretty much. And that's the worst time. So you should always say to a friend, well, it's boring. It's not what they want to hear. They want to hear you give them a multi-bagger, potentially, you know, wealth-creating stock that no one's ever heard of that'll go from one pence to 10 quid. That's what they want. They're never going to get that. Just say, now, if I were you, I'd put a monthly amount into a well-diversified, low-cost fund. That's what I do. And that, honestly, is the best advice you can give them of all.
Yeah, you won't have any friends left in the pub.
That guy's boring, isn't he? Losing the stocks and shares.
He's boring.
They wanted to give an oil and gas stock that got a billion barrels of oil under the ground and literally one penny. No one knows about it. That's what they wanted to give, but it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So tips.
And they'll buy you loads of drinks as well.
Exactly.
You've got to make me loads.
I'll buy this round. Don't worry, mate. You can be a cracking dip. And it goes from the pub. But you get stocks like that sometimes. It goes from the pub to the stock market and everyone gets involved. Retail investors who've never invested before get involved, you know? So basically, tips can get you in trouble. Especially when you're a billionaire owner of a Premier League side and you're on the board of many. I gotta love that. Basically, it's alleged. I gotta say alleged. Joe Lewis. Yeah, he's kept his head on the radar for years, but he made billions when the pound crashed, along with George Soros and all that stuff. Billions. You only need one or two investments in a lifetime to make you billions. And he's done quite well apart from that, but those were the things that really did that. When the pound crashed, he went short massively with George Soros and all that, and he made billions. But I love the fact that still people are asking him for tips and stuff.
Yeah.
And he's...
I love two of the people that he gave tips to were his pilots.
Yeah. No, lovers as well. Apparently he had lovers on the side. And he, how does that work? At what point in the proceedings did he say, oh, do you want a tip? Joe, got any tips? Yeah, I have, actually. I'm on the board of this company, right? I shouldn't be telling you this, but...
I know.
Well, don't tell us then. But that is it. It's even at that level. people are asking him for tips, so he's giving out tips. They love that,
Come on, I mean, that goes on left, right, and centre, especially in AIM, doesn't it? Come on, surely.
You see, for example, there's a couple of, and I often check before big, you see a company rise on big news, right? And you realise it's rise before. Is it last few days preceding the news, the volume has gone up? You think, well, how is that happening? That shouldn't be happening, you know? And I suppose, if you know, first of all, the board of directors know, and then if you took an offshoot of how many people they know, it only takes one person to tell one other person who's a bit leaky, you know? What was it? I can't say what it was, but it was a company. I'm not going to say a company, but literally this week, it shot up on even further. But it had risen by 10-20% before it happened. But anyway, I don't know what it was. Anyway, all right, are you ready for me to transform your portfolio?
Yes, yes. Okay. Let's do this.
I did a bit on taking stock this week. Now, by the way, if you haven't looked at taking stock, join in there, have a watch. Because what we're trying to do there, it's a live daily show on YouTube. It's me and John Heumann. He's ex-editor, Investors Chronicle. It's funny how things go round, by the way. When I went through a rough patch years ago, when I went left sort of Capital Radio in London, a bit skint, and I started off, I was always really investing, and I was producing the Ruth Jones show, and I was a bit skint then, I was renting a house, and I actually approached, I think, John, he was editor of Investors Chronicle, saying, you doing podcasts there? Because they're a big thing, you know? I can help out if you want to help produce, because I was producing. I said, no, we are doing podcasts now, but we got in-house guys. I said, fine. And then it's gone around now. John is now, with me on this daily show, taking stock on Vox Markets. Yeah. So it's on YouTube. Do a search for it. We talk about all the biggest risers, news of the day, and it's focused around, UK sort of small micro nanocaps, which is not really catered for. But there's a very passionate audience there. If you check out, Twitter, the bulletin boards. So we're thinking, let's get this live so that people can comment and suggest stocks. So anyway, check it out. If you haven't, just go on Vox Markets Twitter, look for the links there, or Vox Markets Podcast Twitter, or just go on YouTube and search for that. But it'll be there. It's under the live tab. But we do it on a daily basis. Please join in, subscribe, and you get notified when we go live. It's about 12 o'clock. We're doing it at 12 o'clock now rather than 11 o'clock. We're trying to find a decent time for people. We realize people working, aren't they? But obviously, it's there on catch up as well. But it's nice to get live, we can get chat. Anyway, so I said on there yesterday, right? Investor versus trader. Who makes the most money? And my thought is this, right, is that you shouldn't try and box people in or yourself in to these labels. You shouldn't say, what am I? Am I an investor or a trader? Because, for example, Pete, what would you say the traits of a typical trader is? How do people characterise a trader? What is that? What does that mean? What's investor? What's that mean?
I think a trader is looking for quick wins, short-term movements in stock prices, jumping in and out with an idea of making money in the short term on a daily basis almost.
Yeah.
Whereas investing is the polar opposite to that.
Yeah, so it's mainly about time frame, isn't it? And having any, and looking at charts rather than fundamentals maybe so much, and not caring too much about the company, just looking for a gain on the price action. And yet, if you look at any sort of trader platform, they'll top right, like IG Index, for example, they'll say 80% of retail investors lose money on spread betting and CFDs. You think, what? That's a silly stat. It's like, it's basically 8-1, isn't it, on horses, you know? Would you bet on 8-1 horse? Because that's your chance of making money. Only 2 people out of 10 make money. That's it. So that's what they're saying. So if you think you're better than those odds, go for it. Whereas investors, of course, over the long term, the market goes up. But I think what we should do is not look in those terms to think, okay, what's the best parts of trading or the best traits they use and the best bit about investing? So if I do, for example, people said to me, are you a long-term investor? And they've called, I've called traders, dirty trader, you don't care about the company. Right? But essentially, you shouldn't care about the company. And that's where people are getting into problems. I see people falling in love with companies. The share prices keep going down and down and down and down. I've done it before. I've just believed in the story, not looked at the fundamentals of the price action, and I've been sitting on a massive loss. That is not how an investor should work either, or a trader. You don't do that. So if I research a company, for example, it looks like a good investment. Then a week later, the company came out with awful update. They say the market has changed for them. The CEO steps down. Whose plan you liked and built your investment research on is no longer going to be there. Should I still hold the company because I'm an investor? I'm a long-term investor. I don't care. I'm a long-term one. I don't care. No, I shouldn't. because the business prospects have changed, you know? It's in this scenario, I should get out.
But it's that thing of, like, may have dropped, say, 20%, so you're 20% under, and it's like, do I suck that up and take that 20% loss, or you go, well, okay, things may turn a corner and, you know, it may bottom out around here and then it will recover, and, you know, so you don't want to sell because then the FOMO kicks in, doesn't it? So that's the tricky bit.
And then what happens, it
drops another 20%. You're like, I should have got out at 20% down. And then that's the problem.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, it's hard to take a loss because people don't like taking losses. But you think, okay, it's either that or a bigger loss. Or it could go up. But I don't know the uncertainty. But at the moment, if you know fundamentally the business isn't going to change at the moment, or, you know, they've said, stated, for example, it's not going well, then fundamentally it's probably not going to change. And it'll take a while to turn that company around again. In fact, a classic example is Gfinity there, you know? It's like, the figures were saying something different to what the board was saying. You know, the prospects were good. Everything was growing according to the board. But the figures weren't showing that. And so, first and foremost, always believe figures are fact. That's it. Don't worry what the CEO says or anything like that. Figures are fact. If it starts turning around, okay, there may be a bit of a lag, but the figures don't lie. The figures will improve as well.
But sometimes it's not as clear cut as that, because sometimes you've got to, you know, it's a longer term story, and things aren't happening right now, but the potential's still there, and it doesn't mean that it's a bad stock, it's just taking time. And so sentiment drifts downwards because people, it's taking too long, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. It's just is taking time because of the development cycle of whatever that is, whether it's a drug company or whatever, and you've got to hang in there. It's not as simple as saying, oh well, I mean, when it's changed, when the story's definitely changed, then yes, absolutely, you've got to, you know, forget sentimentality. You've just got to be tough and just get out because it's changed. If it hasn't actually changed, it's just things are taking a long time. That's a different thing, isn't it? That's a different question.
But listen, am I a long-term investor? Put it this way, I will be if the company performs and continues to perform. Yes, I'll hold that stock as long as you perform. If it doesn't, I'm out. That's the way you should be looking at it. You shouldn't just be loyal to a company because you like the company and what they're doing. Because essentially you can be sitting on a massive loss for age, and that is literally really inefficient allocation of capital.
Yeah,
just sitting there, sitting on a loss for ages when you don't need to be. So that's where you borrow, I believe, like from traders, and look at charts and say, if it goes below this level, I'm out. I don't care, because it's something's going wrong. It's not right. And you can hold as long as you want. But I mean, it's literally. What's the most important thing when it comes to trading or investing? What's the most important thing? I mean, if you nail this...
Making your money.
No, it's not, is it?
Oh, isn't it? What is? Risk.
The most important thing is not to lose money.
Oh, okay.
Because if you continue to lose money, you won't have any money to make money. And everyone focuses on the reward. Everyone does. Oh, this is going to make me rich. No one focuses on the risk. But if you ignore the risk and the risk plays out, there's no reward. But if you've covered the risk part of it, then there's only reward, isn't there? So, I've been in profit. Gfinity is a good example. I've been in profit in many of a company and end up losing money. That should never happen, ever. Never happen. That's a really bad mistake I've made there. Huge mistake. And so, first of all, it's like Charlie Munger says, don't do the stupid things. Try and avoid doing the stupid things. Yeah. And then everybody else sorts itself out. Now, what's stupid is, I bought in at Gfinity at 1.5 pence, right?
Yeah,
it rallied to 6.5 pence or something. I end up making a loss. That's unforgivable.
Same. Yeah. Yeah, same.
So this is what's going to transform you. Go on, say what you say.
The only thing I'd say around relying too much on charts is that then a fundamental element, you know, a story to do with the fundamentals can then transform it overnight. So yes, all the charts might be looking bad, but then a piece of news that really is transformational or points in the right direction, you throw the chart out the window because
I've seen. That's why I'm saying you should never base one or the other. Literally, I'm a tech mentalist. Okay.
Yeah.
I do technicals and fundamentals, and I'm going to be more like this. But for example, Gfinity, right? I should never have made a loss. So this is what's going to transform your returns, right, Pete?
Right.
What's the best scenario Scenario, not Scenario. That's not Scenario. That's a chocolate bar or ice cream, I think. Scenario.
Is it?
Yeah.
Solero.
Solero, that's right.
What's the best Solero?
Yes, yeah.
I think the orange one.
Yeah, I thought that. And that's it. That's going to transform your trading. No.
Excellent.
So, stick with the Solero, the orange one. So what's the best scenario you can achieve when it comes to any type of investing? You've got risk, reward. What's the best scenario you can achieve? I'll give you a clue.
Selling at the top.
No, I'll give you a clue. It's removing one of those. You got risk and reward.
Removing the risk.
Yes. A risk. Listen to this. Put this in your head now. A risk.
Put it in my head.
Yeah, yeah. Always the thing. This is what you need to get, right? This is the ultimate goal. And don't worry about the reward. What you want is a risk-free investment. That means there's no risk, just reward. Sounds too good to be true, isn't it? The only variable is the size of the reward. If you can remove the risk, then you've only got reward. And now where else can you achieve this? Let's say if your mate come up to you and says, "All right, Pete, listen, mate, I'm starting a new business, right? I need 5K. Do you want to chuck some money in to invest? It's going to be a cracking business, mate." Listen, now, is your mate likely to say, "If the business goes pop, I'll give you $5,000 back"? No, he's not, because if he had that $5,000, he wouldn't want $5,000 from you. He's wanting you to risk your capital. And that's what you do with stocks and shares. You risk your capital.
He does sound quite dodgy as well.
Yeah. Honestly, Pete, it's a no-risk scenario. Now, if he said that to you, you'd think, how could it be no risk? It's like, it's impossible. I've offered Megan, actually, invest. She offered to invest in the stocks. I said, if you lose, I'll give you money back. And even then, she was panicking about the share price. I said, Meg, like I said, it's a risk-free investment for you.
She doesn't trust you.
Yeah. But so you don't have to trust an individual. What you do is trust the market. Now, so if you manage to get into profit on any company, don't ever give the market a chance, because that's like a dodgy, mate. Listen, it's risk-free, mate, right? Don't ever give the market a chance to take it back off you. So let's say you manage to get a 20% gain, which is a nice gain. It's a big microcaps, you can go a lot higher than that. But it's a nice gain to put a stop loss in. Where? Not right under the 20%, right? Or you can if you want, it's up to you. But put a stop loss in just above your buying price for the entire lot of stock. That's all you need to do. Just above it. Then if the stock tanks, you get out with a little more than you initially invested.
Yeah.
But in that situation, there was only ever upside. So you think, why not take the 20% profit? Okay, it depends on where you're investing. You invest in bigger stocks, 20% is quite a bit, and you put a lot in. Because if you take that 20% profit, you are limiting your upside. And if you're investing in micro-cap, small-cap stocks, you're after big returns. There's also big risk. But if you have 20%, you've taken the risk away straight away. There's no more risk. Mm-hmm. Now, good traders have a plan of that. Even when they go into a trading thing, they put a stop loss like 10% below or 20% below or whatever it is, and then they go for an upside of 2 or 3 times. The ratio is 3-1 or 2-1, so hopefully getting a 2 times gain or 3 times gain, and then a 1 loss. And so over time, the odds are in your favour. Now, I tell you what, let's take Destiny Pharma as an example, right?
Yes.
I mistimed my entry into this, even though I'm up, I don't know, what you're up, even though I'm up nicely because it's gone gangbusters this week. I literally was, I go into this after the placing. Fundamentally, I thought, right, that's a cracking place to get in. They've raised money. There's no worry about this now. They've got a deal on their first asset. Their second asset is bigger. They've got a pipeline of assets as well. This is a ridiculously valued company. And that's all I looked at was value. I didn't even, and the fundamentals of them having cash. And I didn't even look at the chart, really. I did sort of. I let it churn for a few days, and I bought it about 34 pence. It went down to 27 pence. Right?
Yeah.
The chart was messy, really messy. Now, if you look at charts, what I look for, and I've been looking at loads of charts, what I look for is the price to break the 50-day moving average and then the price then to break a previous high of price. Now, that didn't happen with Destiny's Pharma until when? Do you know when that happened? I got in March,
Yeah.
And do you know when that actually happened, the price breaking the 50-day moving average and then rising above previous high?
In this last month, isn't it?
It happened on July the 4th, 24th, it hit 32 pence. So even though that was, only 2 pence below pretty much where I got in, I'd wasted literally a month of it going up and down, uncertainty, just capital just sitting there, going up and down, when I just could have got in, basically. And I got through many major...
You might have missed the move.
You know. Well, yeah, if you're... No, I wouldn't, because I have 17 alerts on it, on the chart. Yeah. So I get notifications on my phone, on my watch, everything. So I wouldn't have... And so from here now, it's gone up from, like, what, 34 pence... It went down from 25 pence up to 47 pence. In fact, it was close to 55 pence. And the people are taking profit now, right? And part of me doesn't understand why that is. Well, if you're a trader, fair enough. If you're sitting on a big profit, I don't understand. But all you need to do, Peter, is put a limit in. I'd say it's probably never going to go back down to... I mean, it's a new CEO come on board, new chairman come on board. They're big hitters. Those kind of guys would not come into a company that doesn't have great assets with huge potential, you know? And if you look at the assets that Destiny Pharma, honestly, it's the one. It's one of those opportunities. It doesn't come around very often. And I kept saying it, this market gap is ridiculous. You've got two late-stage assets. You know, deal on one. This is worth, even on the one asset, like I said, £2.86 is what three brokers have, and that's the lesser of their assets. XF73 is double that, so you can add two times 286 to it, and the pipeline, you're getting towards 9, 10 quid a share if all these get commercialised, you know? So that opportunity is massive. So if you have this kind of opportunity, and AIM throws up these kind of opportunities now and again, not very often, you know, but why would you actually go for 20%? But what percentage profit do you want, Pete, at the moment? Because potentially 15, 10 quid, I think. Yeah, 15%, right?
Yeah.
So you're 15%. When do you buy it then? Or do you average up a bit?
Yeah, I averaged up a little bit. Around 30, because it was after you bought, I think, initially. I was like 32, 33p, but then I bought some more. So my average is a little bit higher than that. So, okay. Yes.
So, for example, right? So you can take like that percentage profit now, okay? Like 15, 20%, okay? Or you can put a stop loss in just above your buy price, say 5% above, you know? And then you have a risk-free go at, say, several 100%, maybe even 1,000% gain.
Yeah,
and so if people are taking profits now, what's the rationale behind that? If you're in profit, just put a stop loss in. I mean, there's no risk if you just put it above your buy price now. This is one of those rare stocks that could literally transform your portfolio, maybe even your wealth, depending on how much money you have in it. You know,
my question. I know we talked about this on the WhatsApp group this week a little bit, but it was it felt like old times, you know, where these stocks are, where you kind of go, hey, that's an incredible value gap there, and there's potential there, and it starts to really rally, and that's exciting, and that's why we're all in this game anyway. My question to you was, you know, observation, it's also like old times, because I'm thinking, oh, I should have put more in.
But you've got to do plenty of time. It'll go up and down. As long as you cover off your risk, you know, and you can never lose, then just sit back, you know. If it trips out, it goes below that, fine. You can get back in at some stage. If the opportunity's still there, if it does do that, trip you out and sell you up, fair enough. There's some reason that's going on. Is the potential still there? If it is, you've got a chance again to get back in, but at the moment, don't take a loss on it now. It's like, but all you've got is you're not limiting your upside, which could be several hundred percent, close to even 1,000%, more than that probably. But who knows?
But if it continues to move up, then is there an indication when you kind of think, well, this is worth it, and putting averaging up?
I mean, I'm going to settle for a while because it's like a bit crazy that the volume has gone through the roof. I mean, literally, this was like, I think the start of, before this week, the average daily volume was like, 100,000, almost close to 200,000. Now it's a million over, what's the average daily volume of this? It's gone from like literally 200,000 to 1.4 million. And in the last 4 days, it's beaten its out of, well, obviously, average daily volume massively every day. So the volume is huge. I just want to calm down a bit. I think most any big seller that was in there is probably out on the volume that's gone through in this last week. So it's risen on a big churn as well. I'll let it settle down.
I'm not aware of any of the new board members buying yet. It hasn't been announced, has it?
No, well, the chairman already had 2.6% of the company, because he's Nigel Rudd. If you look at him, he's like deputy of Barclays. He's a big hitter, a real big hitter. And he said, and he's a legend in the city. He's boasted, I've never been a chairman of a company when I've left the company and the share price has been low when I got in. That's what he said.
Right.
So, yep. And he literally, and if you look at some of the comments on him, Justin Urquhart Smith, who's one of the city boys, said, he goes in there, he buys a lot of shares, and he looks for a quick, big return, and it's not the way it should be. Investing should be long term. Listen, I don't care if he's doing well, if he's transforming businesses, I don't care. You know, all this snobbery about being a long-term investor. No, I'll be a long-term investor if the company performs. If it doesn't, I'm not. I'm a trader. I don't care. Call me what you want. That's it. You know.
But I'd like to just see the new chief exec, you know, put his hand in his pocket and put some skin in the game.
He will probably. He hasn't started. He hasn't started yet. But but again, a reminder. I don't know if you watched that video. A reminder of his background. Phenomenal. One of the best, you know, success stories of AIM. GW Pharma eventually sold out for $7.2 billion. That's a big AIM company, you know, to the Jazz Pharmaceuticals. And he's been at GSK. Yeah. He's been at all these big pharma companies, you know, at high levels, not just an obliquely walking around doing, he wasn't a mailman, you know, postboy in the company. He was a chief operating officer of lots of these big companies. And you think, why are these people attracted to Destiny? Because you know what? And you're right there, the bear market there, it offers opportunities like this on AIM. It almost becomes nonsensical and you don't even believe the opportunity because it's sold off so much. You just think, no, it can't be right. That can't be worth that. Like, if you look at 286 share price, think, no way, it can't be. All it's done now is rallied back to where it was previously before the announcement, before the placing happened and all that stuff. It's gone back to that level where it was in January. So it's not. Yeah. And someone said to me, oh, it's a bit overdone, isn't it? Doubling on a CEO announcement. I said, no, that wasn't the reason why it's rallied.
No.
I said, essentially, that was the catalyst. But people sort of did some further research and realised, you know, look around. I said, look at the peer evaluations of any other company with two, you know, assets gone through phase two, they're going to phase three. One's got a partnership deal. The other one's, that one is $1 billion market opportunity. The second one, XF73, is $2 billion opportunity. They've got a pipeline of drugs as well on top of that. You can't find another company like this valued at, it was like 25 million. Even at 40 million, it's a ridiculous disconnect between the potential and, you know, because like I said, these are late stage. They've done, you know, the tests they've done on humans, the human trials, they've passed them. They're better than the standard care of treatment out at the moment. And for example, M3, it reduces recurrence of C. difficile by 95%. The current market leader only reduces it by, 79%. So it's way better than that. And it also, XF73 as well is literally, you know, outperforms its peers. It's the next standard of care treatment for that area for like infections. So it's like huge. They're potentially massively, you know, the addressable market's huge. Mm. And yet it's like literally, it's still like, 40 million market cap. It's like nuts.
The interesting thing with that is though, because we've come to the story at this stage and, you know, plenty of investors will have got burnt from the drop and then the placing and all of that stuff and are probably dead against this company, although now might be revisiting their position again. Well, actually, okay, maybe it's time to get back into this now. But it's interesting, isn't it? Because if it had been us and we'd been in it from previously, we might not be getting in because we're so frustrated by, you know, the burn that we've taken. But
that's it. People do
And then so the sentiment is you know different for those people to the people like us coming into it now, going, well, hold on, look at this. This is impressive. And more people are obviously now realizing that, and that's why we've seen the rise. But it'll just be interesting to see if, but people that had previously probably lost money on this now go, the story's changed.
And also sentiment changed massively. In a bit. We've had two things happen here. Sentiment changed massively negatively towards the company because of that going to be fundraise. But people coming in after that is fine because they have more money. And also you had the bear market. You had two things there that massively knocked the share price. And when you have that, you know, you can get companies really oversold. And I said to this guy who said, that's the reason why it's doubled. It's just come from a really stupid valuation, oversold, to now getting back to where it was. Look at the chart. I mean, it's not even back to where it was in January. In January, in February and January, it was 60 pence a share. And now that was with a lesser board. The board now they've got on is amazing. They've done a deal on their first assets, which they didn't have. There was the anticipation of a deal that rose on. And they got cash. And they're looking for a deal on the second asset. So it should be a lot higher than it is now. So it's only come from a massively oversold bounce that this has happened. But like I said, you know, you do get these opportunities in AIM, but I think the way to play them is literally, if you really, truly want to, you know, take out or grab the maximum potential from these stocks, then you literally manage to get to a place where you're sitting on a little bit of profit, then lock in the point where you can't take a loss. Because, you know, they can be very volatile. and you can get stocks with massive potential, sell off more than you'd ever expect, and that's where the opportunity comes from. But now, I think now people realise this is, you know, a huge opportunity in this company. It's one of those, it's a rare creature on AIM. You know, there's plenty of opportunities on AIM, of course there are. You get, you know, micro markets, but the scale I'm talking about, and that's what you need to look for. Yeah. When I'm looking for, you know, micro caps, the scale, and you get opportunities in mining as well, because there is, like, literally, if a company's mining copper, there's a big market for copper. You know, we know that. And, like, with, you know, infections, what was the stats on that? The stats are phenomenal. So, where is it? Antimicrobial resistance, for example, right? It's a huge problem. We've been banging on it for years. And they say, unless we deal with this, you know, bacteria being resistant to, you know, all kinds of antibacterial, what's the word? Looking for designed antimicrobials and
antibiotics.
And yeah, so resistant to antibiotics. It's a real big problem because if it continues the way it is and bacteria are becoming more resistant to these, you know, I can't think of the word. Say it again.
Antibiotics.
Antibiotics, yeah, yeah. It's huge. It's huge.
Yeah.
So they're saying now antimicrobial resistance is an urgent global public threat, right? Killing 1.2 million people worldwide. So even if you go in for regular surgery, MRSA and all that can kill you because, you know, these bugs become resistant. And they say it could be nearly 5 million deaths in 2019. And they're saying it could rise to 10 million deaths per year. And their XF73 demonstrated 99.5% eradication of aureus, Staphylococcus aureus in 24 hours in a phase 2B study. So this is actually in real humans. It's not like in a mouse or in a test tube. It's real humans, and so it's granted fast-track designation by the FDA. So very advanced studies on these things, so the risk is lower. And they're betting all the competitors. So they're saying it could be this. So, yeah, I'm not a big fan of mining stocks because they have to take, the model is they have to take on debt, pretty much. But with biotech companies, they just partner with bigger biotech companies who know there's a massive market for it. And that's what we have to do. So they prove up the model till they get to phase three. Phase three is very expensive, and they partner up with a big pharma company who want all this data, and then they say, yes, we're happy with this. Big market opportunity. We'll pay you 10, 12 million up front. I think that's what will happen with this XF73. They'll be paid a big chunk of money up front, and then the big company will take it through, you know, phase three. There'll be no financial burden on it at all. But, yes. But where were people? I mean, you know, the volume's gone through. People are buying now at this price. It's fine. There's plenty of upside there. But where were you when we were shouting about this at, like, you know, 25 pence or whatever it was, 30 pence?
30,
But see, just go
But some people only come to the story now, and there's still a lot of upside. A huge amount of upside.
But so, I was still saying, you know, it was a huge upside when it was 27 pence.
Yeah.
It just shows, you see, that's why you look at charts, because rising share price attract buyers, falling share price attract sellers. You have to sort of buy, and that's why you have to look at literally the share price action informs you of what kind of, you know, profile is it a buyer or is it a seller? Are you getting net buyers or net sellers? And the share price rises when there's net buyers. And what you got with Destiny Pharma there, you couldn't actually buy any. And sometimes during the week, they were like one person selling and the three people queuing up to buy, you know. So literally, that would push the price up more. And they push the price up, and people tend to take a bit of profit. So you shouldn't decry and say, oh, profit takers, dirty sods. No, sometimes it's good because there's buyers that they wanted to buy your stock off you. So that's the way it works, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, so listen, what I'm saying is, Pete, the lesson is, in the future, if you're sitting on a macro cap stock that you're up, say, 10, 15, 20%, well, not 10% because it can be quite volatile, but 15, 20%, say 20%, then you put a stop loss in just above your buy price. And that way, it's a risk-free investment. That is the golden scenario.
Yeah. I remember when I first started, I was very cautious, obviously, as people are. And
I remember you used to do that, yes.
Stop loss. Oh, don't want to lose anything. And then I've just become incredibly blasé, which is really bad. And then
that's a bull market, isn't it? That's because of bull markets. We've gone through a tear where everything started rising. There's no need to do it. But if you just do that on everything, then even if something goes wrong, you won't take a loss. So your portfolio value on that stock will not go down. If you can do that on all stocks you buy, you get the 20%. So all you need, 10-20%, and then all of a sudden, you can't make a loss. If you can't make a loss, you know, one or two of those companies are going to make you a profit, a good profit, and so you're only going to make money. If remove the risk element of the risk-reward, there's only reward.
And the thing that we used to always do, being special on resource stocks and stuff, is, you know, if it doubles, sell half, and then you've de-risked and you've got the money back and all that stuff. And in the bull market, that stuff kind of, well, for me, got forgotten about because it's like, well, this is going to be
looking
much higher.
Like,
and it did.
Yeah, you're looking for, like, rather than looking for 100%, you're looking for 500%. No, I'll keep it all in. I did that with Polarian. Again, Polarian. I was insane. I was up like 300-400% in that, I think.
Yeah.
And it was a big, decent chunk of my portfolio.
Yeah.
And it, just looking at the bear market, it's like, my portfolio's gone down by about, I don't know, it's right. I think in the last quarter, the first quarter, I made money. And I think the market's turning now. But I lost a big chunk of my portfolio, which I didn't need to. If I just put stop losses on the ones I made profit on, I'd have had to save a big chunk. And it's about, but you get married to the story. Don't get married to the story. I said, people out there right now, there's a particular guy on Twitter, and literally, love him, he's made losses on many, many stocks, and he's in a new stock now, and it's a big stock, and it's going down, and he's still talking about the story, and mate, pay attention to the share price a bit more.
Yeah.
And it's going in the wrong direction. Once you get momentum going the wrong way, it's a very powerful thing, momentum. And once it starts going the wrong way, don't stand in the way of it. It doesn't help you at all. In fact, I did write something about this. The last thing I'm going to say on this, but I want to see what I said. Where is it? Are you on Twitter at the moment?
I dip in and out, not really that much, but yeah.
You've changed the logo, right? And first of all, what I notice is it doesn't stand. When you've got lots of tabs open on the top of your screen, the bird stood out. I could see it. It was blue, stood out.
Yeah.
This black thing doesn't, because it just sinks in the background. I don't know why. I can't see it. I don't know what he's doing with the X logo. It's just a bit silly, I think,
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bit
and
random,
now,
isn't it?
Not only that, I'm finding, I don't know if it's my computer. My computer's not old, though. It's very laggy. Twitter, I'm typing, and the text doesn't come out until a couple of seconds later. I don't know what's going on with it.
Right.
Hang on a sec.
Not sure.
This is what I said there. I'm clicking the link now. I'm waiting. There we are. It's opened. It's really laggy. It can't be my computer.
Perhaps he's fired the guys that were in charge of the text input.
Yeah. I said, well, exactly. Hopefully, I said, if I've learned anything about investing, especially during the bear market, is that momentum should never be ignored, whether it's going up or down. A stock can look like a good potential investment, but unless it's got upward momentum, it won't give you a return. Honestly, I'm right now, right, I've got a nice little, it's just going sideways. Good Energy, for example, I think it's going to do very well. Because it's got a dump load of cash, it's in the right area, it's expanding, the margin's getting better, it's actually the volume, the revenue is crazy compared to the market cap. And literally, it's sitting on all cash, and it's going to do very well. But the momentum isn't there. It's very little volume. A little volume, you get a little seller, it'll take it down a little bit, then someone will buy in the afternoon. There's very little volume. I know sooner or later it will change direction, but I'm not going to put more money into it until momentum starts going up, because the momentum may go the other way for a while. And it's just inefficient allocation of capital, but I've got a foothold in there, and I think it's going to go the right direction. But but anyway, it's a stock can look like a good potential investment, but unless it's got upward momentum, it won't give you a return. Once it has momentum, it's a very powerful force, as it's self-fueling energy, because rising attract buyers, rising price attract buyers and falling, so you get more people buying a share price that goes up, and literally more people hear about it. So I just bought this, more people tell other people, it gets viral. And so literally, you have that scenario where there's three buyers for every one seller, and you can't stop it. It's a power force. I said, don't ignore momentum. It's huge, massive. Don't ignore it.
Yeah.
And,
Absolutely.
Anyway, what else? That's it. That's it, really.
That's it.
Are you going to Glastonbury?
I'm not actually. No, I haven't got a ticket or an inclination.
Okay.
Are you?
No, I'm not. I don't know why. I looked at online the other day, and I was on YouTube, and it just went as a joke. I don't know. What, no, in fact, I told Steve this last week. It went to Bernie Manning. Now, I'm not a fan of Bernie Manning. He's dead. But some of his clean jokes are quite funny. He was good at telling them as well.
Okay.
Said, they are good jokes, aren't they? Did you listen to the podcast last week?
I didn't. I was away, sorry. Oh, and I haven't caught up.
Thanks.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll tell you the two jokes of Bernie Manning. No, one joke he told. Steve laughed at one of these ones, right? Rather than the other one. See which one you find funnier.
Okay.
Right? So the first one. This guy goes into a chip shop, and he says, fish and chips, please. And he leaves, comes back. And he says, excuse me. He said, that fish you sold me, was it cooked? And the guy behind the counter said, yeah, why? He says, it's eaten all my chips. That's the first one.
Right.
Another one guy goes into the shop with a big, massive, he goes in the butcher's. Big, massive fish hanging over his shoulders. Huge. And you're not sure this. He said, excuse me. He said, did you fish cakes? He said, no, why? He said, oh, that's a pity. It's his birthday.
Okay. I found it very funny.
Okay, Steve did like the first one. He didn't know. This is a
Steve didn't like the first one.
No, it's a Tim Vine gag here. He said, I rang up British Telecom and said, I want to report a nuisance caller. And he said, oh, not you again.
Okay, yep.
Anything else? Have you got one, Pete? Come on.
No, I haven't got any. No. But you've got to give me more notes than that.
Yeah, okay. He said, it's Tim Vine. I rang up my local swimming bars. I said, is that the local swimming bars? He said, depends where you live.
Yes, that's it. I always remember, I think it was Michael McIntyre's one, wasn't it? The Admiral car insurance ad will say, someone buys Admiral insurance every 6 seconds. What a nutter.
I met this bloke with a didgeridoo, and he was playing Dancing Queen on it. I thought, that's Aboriginal.
There we go.
Tim Vine is good, isn't he?
Yes.
I'm so lazy. He said, I'm so lazy, I've got a smoke alarm with a snooze button on it. Well, that's it for the week. Next week, if you're on, Paddy. I don't know if I believe you where he is, but you can hear him there everywhere. I'm just sitting in the back garden under my pergola.
Probably.
It's quite nice. Yeah,
probably.
All right. Cheers, Pete.
Marvellous. All right. Bye. Good stuff. Bye-bye.
The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The contents of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.